Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR, practice management, and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts? 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Therapy Chat Podcast, episode 496.
This is the Therapy Chat Podcast with Laura Reagan, LCSWC. The information shared in this podcast is not a substitute for seeking help from a licensed mental health professional. And now, here's your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and this week I'm bringing you an interview with Dr. Dan Siegel. We talked about grief, connection, presence, the quantum realm, and integration from a biological standpoint. This was a beautiful conversation. We had met in person just the week before this interview, not for the first time, but we had both been attending, well, he was speaking and I was attending the talk in Baltimore. And so we referenced that in our conversation, which was really all about how we're all interconnected, finding hope in scary times through connection and grief as a portal. We both talked about losing one of our parents over the last year as well. So settle in for a beautiful and hopefully inspiring conversation with Dr. Dan Siegel.
Hi, welcome back to Therapy Chat. I'm your host, Laura Reagan, and today I'm so happy to be virtually sitting again with Dr. Dan Siegel. Dan, thank you so much for coming back to Therapy Chat today.
Laura, thanks for having me back.
It's my great honor, and I'm super excited to be talking with you today. I was just at an event that you were speaking at last week, and we got to chat a little bit there. But what you spoke about was even more rich and beautiful than the teachings that I've heard from you for so many years. And I'm just really, it was very inspiring. And I'm really eager to, I'm getting all emotional, but I'm eager to get more into talking about your new book and some of these other topics that we were talking about at the event last week. Before we get into it, though,
I'm going to stay with what you're feeling. I mean, sure, we can just be present for whatever's arising.
Oh, well, it was just very inspiring to, you know, in this time that's very stressful, to put it mildly, just to have like a bigger perspective about, I'm laughing at myself trying to talk through my tears as my throat's like constricting, to have like a wider perspective about the hope of our human connection. And, you know, just, I think I needed, obviously, that inspiration. So I wasn't expecting to sit here and cry, but thanks for sitting with me.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think we're all connected through being present with whatever comes up. And you know, as we go through this time together, we may deepen our understanding of things. And so I feel really honored that you could just be present with the tears that are coming. Yeah.
Thanks.
I mean, there's so much happening. I mean, I'm here in a center where we're working on people who are trying to bring more compassion into the world and more healing. And it's a time of transition of some people I think have been very important in that area, passing from this life onward. And yeah, so there's so much, going on. So I'm going to let you guide us. There's so much we can get into. Yeah.
Well, so you just kind of mentioned something that
that came up at the event when we were. Yeah.
Turns out that Joanna Macy is still alive and is passing. And I think some people may have thought her passing had already completed, but she's in the middle of it. So after we were together in Baltimore, I actually changed my flight and flew out to be with Joanna on that next day. And, you know, so much of what we were gathered around the song by Bob Sima, I actually sang it for Joanna's kids, and her grandkids were there, and her other people in the family. And, you know, that song was so powerful about transitions like that. So every day I'm checking on my phone just to see where she's at. She's still with us, but she's nearing the end. And there's a caring bridge for anyone who wants to check in on the status. And anyway, Joanna was, for those who don't know, is an incredible figure in our world, of someone who talked about the work that reconnects and the importance of sitting with our feelings, our grief, in particular about the way the world is, climate change specifically, and then moving through the grief to be able to be present for each other. Never think we have to do anything alone, but rather be together in this journey. And she always talked about a quantum change in consciousness, which has so many elements to it. But one of the elements is to awaken to kind of mistaken identity of separation that is really putting us into really dire straits on Earth these days. So I'm here now in Costa Rica working exactly on that. And, you know, pardon me, wanted to stay in California to be near Joanna, but I know she would want me to have come here. So I'm here with her in my heart. Yeah.
That's so beautiful. And it's really heartwarming to know that you were able to go and see her.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you got news, you thought you wouldn't be able to see her again living and on Earth. And the fact that you were able to go and see her is so beautiful. But also the singing, you know, that was such a soulful gift.
Yeah, people were asking me what I was doing in Baltimore, and, you know, I told them about the Bob Sima concert and that I gave a little talk beforehand and all that stuff. And they heard that I sang the song with the songwriter, you know, and they said, "Will you sing it for us?" And in that setting, you know, it was so beautiful to have a song about the meaning of life and how to get to the end and have a smile on your face when it's this moment when your heart is full and your hands are empty. And anyway, so it was very fitting. And for any of us, I mean, I've had a number of people close to me die in the last, you know, 6 months, including my mom. So I feel tender about, I mean, this whole fragility of our life. And, you know, we have a lot to do in these lives. And one of them is to honor these moments of transition and how we can love each other and realize it doesn't last forever, you know. So it's a very, you know, profound moment, you know, for Joanna's family and for those of us who know her, and also just for in general in the world with everything going on in the world. So it's personal stuff, it's planetary stuff, and they're not separate, you know. And that's, I think that's the work, to try to be present for it all, you know.
Yeah. Well, that was so present for me in Baltimore when we were hearing from you. What you shared was so deep and rich, and the musical performance was beautiful. Bob's lyrics and message are just really powerful. I lost my dad in November last year. So I was at the Networker in March and heard you speak about your mom's passing. And just that was very moving for me, you know, knowing you're in that space, like losing a parent. It's just a grief itself, but the end of your parent's life is just a very specific experience. And
I mean, the people who gave rise to us have now given rise to the end of their body form anyway. And I'm really open to how life persists after the body is done. And that's just an interesting and important question, how we sit with that But even if you just stay with the stories that we carry forward from our parents and others, and Joanna is exactly my mom's age. I mean, they had birthdays just 6 weeks apart. So, you know, having this deep relationship, of course, with my mom, but also with Joanna was, you know, interesting to be in my 60s and have a relationship with people in their mid-90s, you know. But in a sense, life is timeless, you know. I mean, when you have a true connection with a parent or a deep friend, you know, it is kind of timeless. And that gets into the whole thing I talked about a little bit, I think, in Baltimore. But, you know, it's sometimes hard to grasp that, you know, we have these two realms that physics has demonstrated we live in. And one is time bound, and it's large objects and things tend to fall about parked in this Newtonian or large object world. So the body doesn't last forever being a large object. But there is a realm of small things, smaller than an atom, that has different properties. Just like walking in water, swimming in water is different from walking on land. You know, those are different properties. We have different properties in these two realms. So I'm really open to, as a scientist, you know, just thinking deeply about, in an open way, about what is, you know, what is the way the energy flow that is our lived experience? How does energy flow, which is in the micro quantum realm, how does it have elements that are, you know, transcending the noun-like bodies in the Newtonian realm? So since my mom died in January, you know, I feel I communicate with her. I'm totally open to that's fabricated by my brain. And I'm fine with that. I'm also open to the possibility, I don't know if it's true or not, that there is some timeless essence of us, including my mom, that stay in a realm that if we open to it, and I do the Wheel of Awareness every day and access this hub of the wheel, which I think is the quantum realm, you know, then it's like a portal that you start receiving stuff. And again, I'm 100% fine if it's just my brain that internalized my beautiful, wonderful, fantastic mom. And she talks to me, you know, not, I don't hear her actual voice, but I hear her words as a sense of her. I don't know if you have that with your dad. I didn't have it with my dad when he died at all, but I had a different relationship with him. That was about over 12 years ago. But with my mom, I've been having it. And it's really a joy because when my dad died, none of that kind of stuff I had heard about happening with people close to you happened. But it's happening with my mom. It still happens every day. So I feel really open to whatever it might be. And I'm curious, but I don't really have to have a definitive answer about that.
Yeah. And I loved that you said that. I loved that what you just said, and also that you spoke about the quantum realm and, you know, something I've sort of heard about and I can sense about. And, you know, there's our intuition and there's our nervous system responses that are not conscious. And, you know, and even like this might sound very elementary, but why were we once in the womb living in a fluid, you know, like a water creature, and then we come out and we can breathe air? Like, does anybody think that's weird? Like, you know, I mean, some of these things that we just sort of go, well, that's just how it is. But if maybe 500 years ago, when they didn't know what was going on inside or whatever, however long ago, it would be totally crazy to suggest that we could change from a being that's living in a water environment to not water, but, you know, fluid,
yeah,
to one that can breathe air and doesn't live, can't breathe in water, you know?
Exactly. Well, exactly. And, you know, this last book I wrote with my wonderful colleagues, David Daniels and Denise Daniels, Laura Baker and Jack Killen, called Personality and Wholeness and Therapy. You know, we came to a proposal that we thought, there it is. Oh my God, there, you know, and you know,
like
that, you know, we propose that this state of effortless being in the womb gets embedded in a layer of memory called implicit memory. And that, you know, we have a memory of feeling, if you just want to use the word whole, feeling whole and not having to do anything and just no separation and nothing to do, just being, effortless being. And once you're out of the womb, I mean, it's do or die, you know, this working for a living state of having to make sure your body's needs are met, your relational connections keep you safe, you know, that you can have some kind of certainty in the world. And it's been fascinating, even here at this meeting, you know, to see the relevance of that personality model for people trying to make the world a better place, not just therapists or patients or whatever, clients. So it's been really interesting. And I thought there'd be a big pushback on, you know, looking at the effortless being of that floating moment you're talking about, Laura. And instead, for the most part, people are really excited about it and go, wow, you know, yeah, like personality can be seen as a filter that your particular temperament has set up for you on this lifelong journey to try to get, and you can either say to wholeness, or you can say get back to wholeness if you believe in the womb story, being at one with the womb. Yeah, so it's an exciting moment because that project that of that book you held up took us 20 years to put that together. And I was always questioning whether it was worth the effort or the time, or it was incredibly difficult to write a book with four people, especially when one was not even in this bodily form. He had passed, David. And, you know, so to hear people's finding it useful, I'm always going, oh, really? It's useful? And they go, oh, yeah. So we had a late night session with a couple of people here in the retreat center. And, you know, it just came up, well, maybe you should teach them this. So I did. And their eyes were like bugging out of their mind, their heads, like, going, oh, my God, this explains my entire life. So it's fun. And, you know, I think it's a lesson in if you try to stick close to truth and don't just cave in to public opinion or public pressure or, you know, what is the dogma of the day, and try to stick a foundation in this consilience, you know, different things like indigenous teachings or contemplative teachings or, you know, science teachings, whatever. If you find a common ground, we call that consilient. And so the simple mission is see if you can discover or uncover or illuminate truth that you're not creating, you know. So people say, oh my God, this model is so elegant. Congratulations. I said, no, I didn't create the model. Nature created the model. I just, you know, was really determined with my colleagues to see if we could uncover the layers that are blocking us from seeing that model. So the model is really beautiful. It's really elegant. And I didn't create it. I just, you know, maybe wrote a book about it, but it's nature that we're congratulating because it's a really beautiful model.
Yeah. And I really would love for you to explain more about that. And I want to say something about that consilience, this idea of, you know, being able to connect with your mom and talk with your mom, not in a way like as if she's sitting here in body with you, and being just open-minded to, well, how is this really happening? I know it's happening, but what is making this happen? And then you hear so many people who have experiences like that when someone they were really close and connected with passes. And some people call it, you know, the veil thins, and, you know, the other world and this world, there's, you know, more access maybe when we're in grief. I've been thinking of grief as a portal. So it's funny that you use that word portal. There are other ways that I think are kind of coming together, synthesizing maybe slowly in our mental health field, of getting to some kind of truth that doesn't necessarily fit into a certain box. Like, people are arriving at the same conclusions or having the same kinds of experiences through many different methods, whether it's like psychedelics or somatics or, you know, brain spotting or EMDR or some of the other ways that people are just, you know, oh, I had this moment where I felt like it's all going to be okay, and we're all connected, and we're all being held by something greater. You know, you could call it just a spiritual experience, but it's when you're having those moments, it's like, oh, I see now. This is way bigger than my little brain could have thought. My conclusion is, so to me, you know, not being a scientist like you, my conclusion is, if a lot of different people are having the same experience in many different ways, then it just, for my belief system, it begins to feel just like, well, that seems, there's something to this, you know? It's not, I'm not making it up, or I'm not telling someone it might be like this. They're having that experience. And where is that coming from? I'm not creating it, even in therapy.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think people in therapy sometimes reveal experiences that, for me, we can say, oh, they're full of the unknown, and that's absolutely beautiful to hold the mystery. And at the same time, the scientist aspect of me is really excited that when you look at what the Nobel Prize was given for in 2022 in physics, and you think of the mind as, in mathematics, what we call an emergent property. So that's a math term. So you build on math and physics, and then you say, okay, from a chemistry point of view, you've got a body full of molecules, and a biology point of view, you've got this system full of organs and all that stuff that's called your body, that you actually can take all those layers of science, math, physics, chemistry, biology. And, you know, I'm trained as a researcher in psychology. I'm an attachment researcher. So, but I'm also those other things as a, you know, biology is my background, but also as a physician. So, you know, I brought that kind of science, transdiscipline, you know, honoring state of mind to my training as a psychology researcher. You know, and then as a psychotherapist, you know, working in our field of healing and growth of the human mind, you know, maybe because I was trained in all those different scientific areas, the decade of the brain, the 1990s, when the statement was made, mind is only what brain does, I knew, being a physician, that it's what Hippocrates had said 2,500 years ago in a book about epilepsy, you know. And he made that statement, and it sort of stayed with modern medicine. And it's partly true, but the word to look at is only. The mind is only what the brain does. So by asking the question, well, what if that is wrong? What if the way modern medicine and modern neuroscience has been pitching mind is what brain does only, underscore the word only. What if it includes the brain and the brain's activity, but it's something bigger than the brain, broader than that brain activity, and even bigger than the body? So then you would have to look at the embodied approach to our work as psychotherapists, which is so important, somatic approaches. But then you would look at the relational world that we live in as, you know, something that it could be somehow related to the embodied aspect, including what happens inside the skull and the whole nervous system. So that's where it became kind of exciting to propose, based on mathematics, that there's something called an emergent property. It's kind of like Buckminster Fuller in the 70s talking about synergy. His beautiful article called Synergetics by him, which really inspired me. But it basically said, look, when we think in systems terms, synergy is where the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. That's the idea of that. So in the 80s, mathematicians got together and studied the activity of what are called complex systems, which are collections of stuff, could be air molecules and water molecules for a cloud, for example. And that collection of stuff is called a system. And if the system has three properties of being open to influences outside of itself, outside of the cloud, like sunlight or hitting a mountain or geese flying into it, those are not a part of the cloud, but they can influence it. So it's an open system. A system is capable of being chaotic, which means roughly random. You could have a random distribution of those water molecules and air molecules, but they're not. But they could be, so it's chaos capable. And then, you know, what's called nonlinear, which means small inputs like a flock of geese, really lead to very difficult, if not even impossible, to predict outcomes. So a small little input leads to a relatively large result that's hard to predict, if not it might even be impossible to predict. That's called nonlinear. So if you're a nonlinear, chaos capable open system, you're called a complex system. And what has been demonstrated in the 80s was that complex systems have a synergy. They don't use the word synergy, but they have emergence. There's something that emerges from the interaction of the water molecules. The example would be wetness. Wetness is not in any single water molecule, but if you get a bunch of them in your hand is wet. So wetness would be just a way to illustrate what we mean by an emergent property. Wetness is an emergent property of collections of H2O water molecules. So that being said, in the 90s, drawing on the mathematics of complex systems, I just thought maybe, you know, the mind was an emergent property of something that could be both inside you and between you and other people or you and nature. And that something that made scientific sense was energy. Mm. Energy flows through the body. The nervous system is based on electrochemical energy transformation. The way you and I are communicating to each other and is through sound waves, which is energy in kinetic motion of air molecules called sound. And we see each other in this setting because we have a video. If you're watching Laura and me, you know, that's photons, that's energy. So, you know, energy is not limited by skull or skin. So all that is like the background of our field, interpersonal neurobiology, just to say, you know, there's an there's a relational field that is akin to, you know, what Faraday talked about in the 1800s, that people thought he was nuts because you couldn't see it with your eyes. But all of our electronics are based on his nutty idea, you know, that there are these fields. So I have some colleagues of mine at MIT, Peter Senge, Metta Bowl, sometimes Otto Scharmer is in the conversation. You know, we talk about relational fields. We don't know exactly how to measure them, but you could feel them. I think you can walk in a classroom, you can feel a generative field or a degenerative field. And I think it's myself, this is now my opinion, I think it's integration. When you're honoring differences and promoting linkages, we call that integration. When integration is there, the relational field is integrative, and that's what makes a generative field. And then you see all these beautiful things like harmony arise. It's flexible, adaptive, all those things, coherent, energized, stable. All that being said, I think, like for Joanna Macy, she may not have used the term integrative, but when she talked about a quantum social change, or no, quantum change of consciousness, Karen O'Brien talks about quantum social change. She and I were just teaching in Norway. But in a way, those two, I wish I could have gotten them together when Joanna was able to do that, because the quantum social change that Karen O'Brien talks about in a book called You Matter More Than You Think is essentially these things, as you mentioned, Laura, are portals that allow integration to arise. So we can really try to understand the science of it, but the reality of it is, I think healing and psychotherapy is creating a relational field that's generative, because you as a therapist are honoring the difference between what your life history was, what you expect, what you think, what you feel, your memories, and what your client is also experiencing in those same realms. So that's the differentiation. Differentiation just means allowing and supporting and honoring and flourishing with differences and linkages. And we're in the linkage, you don't lose the differentiation. So, yeah, as I always say, it's more like a fruit salad than a smoothie. You know, you're not grinding everything up and making homogenous.
Yes.
So integration is what we do, and it's the base of healing and health and growth. And, you know, one day I think someone will be able to study relational fields. And I think when therapy works, you know, and in Bob Simon's song, he talks about how do you count an uncountable sum? And I think there's an uncountable sum when a generative field is having someone heal in therapy. And I know we want to have, you know, what are they called? The evidence-based this and that, you know, therapy. But the work that you really see, John Norcross talks about this beautifully, the deep work of therapy are the uncountable sums of how we generate in our own unique combination of our collaboration on the journey of healing with our clients, a relational field that's generative. And that can't be counted, and you can't just do it in a manual. It's learning how to be present and, you know, facilitating. We have 9 domains of integration you can learn. We do this in our Mindset Institute program, but you can learn how to feel into the blockages to integration, and you learn which of 9 domains might be blocked. And then, you know, like a laser beam, you then work on the blockage, you release the blockage. And then what is so exciting is that the natural healing process is in the client.
Yes.
So you're just helping them get the blockage out of the way and letting integration naturally arise.
Yes.
Today's episode is sponsored by Psychotherapy Networker and PESI. If you're a therapist, be sure to check out the partner page, which is linked in the show notes, where you can get discounted trainings with previous Therapy Chat guests like Courtney Armstrong, Dr. Leslie Korn, Dr. Ariel Schwartz, Dr. Tammy Nelson, Dr. Janina Fisher, Rebecca Case, Dr. Peter Levine, Dr. Lindsay Gibson, Deb Dana, Lori Gottlieb, and many others. You'll find the link in the show notes to my partner page with PESI and Psychotherapy Networker, where you can find all these discounted training. If you need CEs, this is a great place to go. Therapy Notes is consistently transforming the way therapists manage their practices with continuous updates designed to save money and improve efficiency. Their latest game changer, Therapy Fuel, a powerful and fully integrated suite of AI tools that streamline documentation so you can focus more on your clients. With AI features that help by generating progress notes from summaries or transcriptions, creating contact notes directly from client secure messages, and automated summaries of client history forms, Therapy Notes users are already reporting hours of saved time and energy. Some other recent feature improvements include automated recurring client payments, electronic secondary insurance billing, and their constantly expanding library of outcome measures. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today. It's like that's how it is physically. There's so many things that it's already in here. But what is blocking it? If you were thinking of physically, like I'm thinking, because I go to PT and I have like a pain here, it's like, and the physical therapist is getting the block out of the way so that the movement can be how it's supposed to be. And then my body just knows what to do once the thing is out of the way. It's not like now move, you know, my body just knows how it's intended to be. But that's like so different from the evidence-based practice kind of paradigm, the more, you know, top down paradigm of measuring, and sort of what you were saying before about the two realms. You know, there's one that's very measurable. The song that you love is called The Measure, right?
Yeah. Tell me what is the measure of a life well done. That's how it starts. Yeah, exactly. And I highly recommend you check out Bob Sima, S-I-M-A, his website, and or however you get music, you know, because that song, he has many, many, many wonderful songs. And we heard them that night at the concert. And that song in particular for our discussion here has so many elements that, you know, I spent an hour and a half decoding his song, and Bob was so happy and excited about that. We've been in continual texting with each other since then, because we never really texted with each other before. So it was really fun. Yeah.
I'll link to his website. And
yeah, please do.
Just again, there's something about that. Like you were talking and you are a scholar, you're so well respected and brilliant. And the musical performance is a different kind of brilliance, that there's an alchemy that was happening between Bob and Shannon when they were singing, and the harmony that Shannon brought in, the way that it changed the sound of the tune, and your singing brought a different aspect to the three voices together and the guitar. You know, it's like all of that just felt so powerfully symbolic of everything about life and death, our connection, our like, what are we doing here? Why do we exist? You know, what are we trying to do? We're not just here to go shopping, you know?
That is a great phrase, Laura. That's a great phrase. We're not just here to go shopping.
Yeah.
I love
but
that.
It is kind of like that's what we're usually focusing on, is just like getting our needs met, going places, doing things, just being productive. And
but, you know, that phrase you just said is so illuminating of the fundamental problem. And I'll say things from a mental health and medical health point of view, that if you get a message in society that you are not sufficient and you are not enough, then you get this antsy feeling that, oh, I better do something to be enough. Oh, I think the message is have more stuff. I better go shopping, right? Well, then there's this endless loop. Some people have named it the hedonic treadmill, But it's even, I mean, hedonic maybe is an okay word, you know, get pleasure, but it's maybe deeper than pleasure in the sense for me to feel sufficient to fill an empty hole, people call it the hungry ghost in certain contemplative traditions, you know, because it's alive, that message, first of all, you are sufficient. So the message is a lie, and it creates this thing in my field, we call epistemic trust violation, you know, violation of epistemic trust. Epistemic means how we know what we know. And if someone tells you, hey, Laura, you're insufficient because of you don't have enough stuff, or you look this way or that way, or you're acting this way, or this is how your life is, you know, then, you know, you're going to have a feeling of insufficiency. But the fundamental epistemic violation is you were told a lie. So if we don't question these, in the narrative world, they're called master narratives. If we don't question the master narrative of our culture, and in an individualistic culture, it's you're not enough. And why is that a message that is important for some people to convey? Well, because then you'll go shopping. And then if you get in the position to be selling the stuff that people are buying, well, you're going to have more stuff. I mean, it's that simple. And then we get stuff, right? Literally. And then we use up all the stuff on the planet, and we're busy consuming this incredibly wonderful planet. And, you know, Joanna used to say, you know, she was madly in love. She even said to me the other day when I was with her, you know, madly in love with this world, you know. And this is a magnificent place. Only if we treat it like a commodity, something we buy when we go shopping, that's the fundamental problem. So your statement is fun and funny and, you know, is actually profoundly illuminating of all the layers that one word people use is the polycrisis. And some of my colleagues have renamed that as the polyopportunity, meaning, you know, like, well, we have racism and we have war and we have climate destruction and we have all these ways where we're having crises for sure. What if we reframe it instead of those threatening ways, we put in a challenge mindset, which is to say, there are these wonderful opportunities. And so whether it's Karen O'Brien's fantastic work, and I heard you put her website up too.
I will.
Quantum social change, you know, or you look at, and there's I can't remember exactly the name of her website, but or Joanna Macy's work that reconnects, you know, the common ground for those two beautiful, beautiful teachers, you know, is really looking at deep change. So the poly opportunity frame that Angela Costa and Sarah King and others have used, that beautiful way of framing it, makes it upbeat. Like, let's take your phrase, you're not just here to go shopping. So we could then attack shopping, or we could say, we're not just here. Well, then what are we here for? And that's where Bob Sima's song is so cool. You know, we're here to get love, give love, feel love, see love, be love, believe in love. And then, you know, for me as a scientist, having done 65,000 Wheel of Awareness practices, and people get into pure awareness in the hub, and the most common term they say when they get there is love. We just did it here the other day. You know, people had that experience. And, you know, it's almost like love is the fundamental thread of the fabric of the universe. And yet we're away from it. So Scarlett Lewis, I met her at a recent energy conference, and she's the mom of Jesse Lewis, who sadly was murdered in the elementary school killings. And he actually, as a 5-year-old, saved a bunch of kids' lives, and he himself, unfortunately, was killed. So she started a program that we should also link to called Choose Love. And, you know, we talked about this thing that Jesse wrote the morning he went to school that day, you know, was, and I'll probably get all the names wrong, but she has it on her website. It's like nurture, loving, compassion, something like that. Maybe three other words, but those are the fundamental feeling of it. So I might not have them exactly right. So she had an event just the other week online, and I, you know, was able to be one of the speakers, and such an honor, because love is the fabric of the universe. And, you know, love comes from that plane of possibility, which I think is what the hub of the wheel is a metaphor for. And it's the portal that allows integration to arise. So in our institute, we always say, you know, integration made visible is compassion and kindness. And that's basically what you feel when you express love. It's what you show, kindness and compassion. So what I said in that meeting, and I, you know, want to just emphasize for us here, is when we can get the blockages out of the way, Scarlett Lewis's wonderful movement, Choose Love, is it's a movement of, you know, this is the kind of movement where whether you're looking at what's happening in different countries around the world, all around the world, United States, but not just the United States, all over the world, we have an effort to not respect differences, whether it's religious, racial, gender issues. You know, integration requires that we realize there's unity in diversity. And it's a health issue. It's not a political issue. Mm-hmm. It's a health issue. So I was honored that after me was Vivek Murthy, the former Surgeon General, wrote a whole book on the epidemiology of the finding that we have an epidemic of loneliness. Maria Shriver is on there, does beautiful work, you know, in this area. So this being real is being open to, you know, integration, which is basically love, how we experience love. So I say all that because our field in mental health, or whether it's you're in the education side of it or working in schools or working with coaches or wherever you're working as a mental health advocate, this idea of choosing love that Scarlett Lewis's program talks about involves, as Karen O'Brien would say, this quantum social change for you to remember that you matter more than you think. And that book of that name by her is exquisite. You know, and the work to reconnect is, you know, Joanna Macy's way of saying, look, we need to reconnect to our own inner experience of grief. And to me, that's really letting go of blockages to then realizing we can go forward. And one of the last conversations, Joanna and I used to always record our conversations together. So as she's passing, I'm listening to all the recordings we made, our private conversations. And it's, I went to bed, you know, listening to it. And it was hilarious because she's very much alive in these, obviously, in these recordings. So we both love dancing, and I used to be into dance a lot. And so we talked about how to take the challenges we're facing, this poly opportunity situation, and see them not as threats, but as dance partners. And she's laughing and saying, that's so great. You know, what's the music of the day? And I said, yeah, you know, you wake up in the morning, and you say, bring it on. You know, how do we dance to this challenge? So I think there's incredible moment where we can actually allow that to happen, you know.
So moving, everything you're speaking about. And I feel like it's like, you know, our shared humanity, our common humanity is like one of the aspects of compassion and self-compassion. And our this lie about that we aren't worthy unless we are a something, whatever, is us losing connection with our own humanity, it feels like. And, you know, so I have heard about Joanna Macy's work through Frances Weller's book, The Wild Edge of Sorrow. But, and then when you named her, I was like, I gotta look more at her stuff. It's sounds so hope inspiring. And that's,
yeah. In fact, that's a good book of hers to start with. She has a second edition of Active Hope she wrote with a colleague. And Stephanie, whose last name I can never pronounce, was actually there with me at her house, who edited a book called, I think it's called A Wild Love of the World, which is both Joanna putting in little vignettes, but also her students over the last, you know, 50 years putting in stories about her. It's a very comprehensive summary of her work. So that's a good one to really explore. And Joanna wrote a bunch of other books too. World as Self, World as Lover is another great one. This computer is actually sitting on her book called Widening Circles that I'm reading. It's her autobiography. It's her memoir, you know. And look, we're in this together. This is the thing. We're in this together. So we are sufficient and we need each other. And needing each other doesn't mean we're insufficient. It just means we're relational beings. And we become who we are in our connections. That's the work that reconnects. The quantum social change that Karen O'Brien is beautifully writing about is basically saying, you're not in this alone. You know, the whole nature of a quantum view versus a Newtonian view is that we are verb-like processes that are massively connected with one another. A Newtonian mental view of life is we are noun-like entities that are separate from one another, mm-hmm. in time and space, right? Dimensions which don't have the same meaning in the quantum realm. So, you know, all these things kind of are coming together with indigenous teachings, contemplative teachings, So it's not like it's new. This is thousands of years old on one level. But for those of us growing up in modern individualistic cultures, these calls from Karen O'Brien and Joanna Macy, they're really calls to wake up to indigenous teachings, to contemplative wisdom, and to say, okay, you know, if we want to be only scientific about it, which we don't have to be, but if we wanted to be, now there's a science that goes along with these ancient teachings, these wisdom teachings. And so it's an incredibly exciting moment. Joanna used to always say, before her body was done, you know, I'd go out to dinner with her and say, how you doing with the new UN report? She goes, you know, it's really hard. So I'm grieving the fact that our human family is not doing it. But I'm so excited to be alive. There's so much to do. There's so much work for us to do, you know. And it really always gave me inspiration to hang with her because, you know, what else is there to do but give it a big try, as my daughter tells me, you know, to be really passionate about the purpose and the direction, but not obsessed about the specific outcome. And yeah. So then we cannot lose. We're going to do this together, do it with fun and humor, but do it together. And no, the direction is an integrative direction. Become generative, not degenerative. To become inclusive, not exclusive. To be allowing differentiated voices and bringing them all to the table. Bringing them to the guiding forces that are directing us. Not just saying, okay, let them have this land over there or whatever. You know, there's wonderful richness in our diversity. And so I understand some people are traumatized and want just things to be exactly like they are or whatever. And we got to help them heal and realize that the truth that love is an integrative emergence of all of us honoring our differences. That's health. And that's a health statement I'm making, not a political statement. It is, I'm saying it as a scientist, as a physician, as a psychotherapist. Integration honors differences and promotes linkages, and it's a medical statement. And so when we see the chaos and rigidity that arise when we don't promote integration, you can feel the suffering that emerges all over the place from that. And that's when integration is not being honored. So, you know, we have a kind of a clear path. It's an integrative path if we're going to be healers and health promoters and advocates for the truth.
I feel sure that is the way forward, because it's about, you know, where do we go from here? Not looking back and saying, well, not that, you know, there isn't a lot of value in understanding how we got here, but, you know, now what? Not just trying to contract and do things the same way that, you know.
Well, I know we got to stop soon in Newtonian time, but it was for the extended time. If you feel into, we do this in all the interpersonal neurobiology stuff, but if you feel where there's chaos or where there's rigidity, whether it's in a classroom or a company or a country or a planet, you know integration is being impaired. Our job can be integrationists. Even if it's in the small thing of your own internal mind, do the work. There are 9 domains of integration you can work on. Maybe it's just within your family. Maybe it's just within the community. Maybe it's just within your state. Maybe it's just within your country. Maybe it's just within the planet and just our human family. Whatever the just is, don't worry about it. You start making little changes. This is the idea of quantum social change. There are going to be ripple effects, even if you don't want to do the quantum stuff. You know, Christakis and Fowler wrote this incredible book called Connected. You start bringing integration into whatever is the just world. You bring justice, which is integration made visible too. You bring that into the world and that's it. And then that's the work we do. However it is in your personality to do, we do that. And we're not helpless. You know, when you feel helpless, get helpful. And there's a lot for us to do. And it's a beautiful thing. And do it with joy. Do it with a smile on your face, because we can do this together. Or I like to say muy, you know, not just me, muy, M-W-E, muy can do this together. Yeah.
I love that you brought muy into it also. At the event, when we were going to take a photo with Lauren going and you and I, and I said, you saw Sabrina, Dr. Sabrina and Jai there too. I said, we're going to do a selfie. Well, I guess it's we are going to do a selfie. I loved it.
Yeah.
So Dr. Dan Siegel, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. I know that a lot of what you're we spoke about is in this book, although we didn't go into how the Enneagram and these theories of personality fit together. Specifically, that's kind of woven into everything we talked about. So people can get this book and learn about those connections. I don't know if you want to say anything else about that before we
wrap up. I mean, I think there are 9 pathways we're vulnerable to burning out in these challenging times. And there are 9 pathways to really reigniting our passion. So the thing I'm really proud about that book is we really took a consilient approach to try to look at different disciplines and how to understand how temperament ultimately is what we adapt to be the foundation of personality. And then our attachment can either make it a low level of function or high level of function. So it's all in the book, but it relates to everything we've been talking about today in the deepest kind of very specific application. So take a look at the book and we can talk about that more another time.
Yeah, well, I would love that. And thank you again so much for spending time with me today. I feel once again inspired and I'll be thinking about this for weeks. But I'm just grateful. I'm grateful that you were with me now, but I'm also just really grateful for what you're doing in the world. I'm going to start crying again. And I also want to just, I want to say this out loud here and have you hear it and have our audience hear. Your humility is just so unusual to be someone who's so highly accomplished and yet so not in a fake way. You're just, you are so down to earth. And it's a beautiful model for not only all of us, but, and men, you know, it's just, it's really, I really value and appreciate you for who you are as I understand. So,
well, thank you, Laura. That means a tremendous amount to me. And thank you for being who you are. And it's an honor to be here with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So I'll be sure to put your Mindsight Institute website and all of the great, beautiful, inspirational resources that you mentioned in our show notes. So everyone who's listening can check those out too. And I'm just going to say one more time that I'm sending you a lot of compassion as you are weathering your friend's transition right now and your process in life. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Laura. Really an honor to be here with you.
Therapy Notes is the highest rated EHR practice management and billing software for mental health professionals. Its all-in-one platform is designed to streamline all aspects of your practice, from connecting with clients via secure messages to scheduling, notes, billing, and more. You can trust Therapy Notes has you covered. And one of the best parts, 24/7 customer service with a live person. It's beyond easy to get help over the phone or by email at any time of day from their knowledgeable and friendly representatives. The best time to give Therapy Notes a try is now. Sign up for your free trial by going to therapynotes.com, clicking Start My Free Trial, and accessing your first 2 months free with the promo code CHAT. See why Therapy Notes is the most trusted EHR for behavioral health professionals today.
Thank you for listening to Therapy Chat with your host, Laura Reagan, LCSWC. For more information, please visit therapychatpodcast.com.